call the committee to order. At this point, operating as a subcommittee until we get a quorum. And we're continuing with the Department of Administration.
Madam Chair and members, thank you. My name is Dana Badgero. I'm the Commissioner of Administration. And today we have part two of our agency overview and budget. And in particular, we are going to cover this afternoon the rest of our change items, having covered grant management, the Office of Grants Governance, just the other day, all the remainder of the items we would hope to try to cover today. We're going to start right off with an individual I identified the other day as our celebrity. This is the state demographer, Tom Gillespie, and he will tell you about the change item with respect to the census.
Thank you, Commissioner. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom Gillespie, and I'm the Minnesota State Demographer. We are requesting a one-time funding appropriation to prepare for and promote the 2010 census. This will be a project that is similar to what we did in the before the 2000 census and also before the 1990 census. Census Day is officially April 1st, 2010, but preparation for the 2010 census has already begun, and activities will increase up until that date and then quickly diminish after April 1st, 2010. We are requesting $60,000 in fiscal year 08 and increasing that to $240,000 in FY 09. We will also be seeking additional funding for FY 10 and 11 when the time comes. The purpose is to ensure a full and accurate count of population for Minnesota and its jurisdictions. In 2000, Minnesota had the lowest undercount rate of any state in the nation. Our activities will coordinate with the U.S. Census Bureau and include work with local units of government, full count committees around the state, targeted activities to traditionally difficult to count populations, general promotion to the public, promotion of job opportunities with the census, and technical activities such as checking maps and address lists, checking early returns, and identifying potential errors in the data. The benefits, and here I list three. The census is used to reapportion the U.S. House of Representatives according to the Constitution of the United States. And looking ahead to 2010, our forecast right now is that based upon recent growth rates, Minnesota is looks like it's right on the cusp of that eighth seat. Right now, if the forecasts continue on, we would be slightly under the break point with and slightly meaning less than 3,000 people difference between us and three other states, that it will be a very close call, and the final outcome will depend very much on growth for the remainder of this decade and the relative quality of the counts in the 2010 census to determine whether or not we retain our eight congressional seats. In addition to that, there are large federal and state programs that use census data to distribute funds based upon formulas linked to those data. Pricewaterhouse has estimated, based on eight federal programs alone, an allocation of $2,913 per capita over the decade of federal money. There are other programs which are more difficult to enumerate, so that this would be a low estimate. And furthermore, there are various state programs such as local government aid and municipal street aid and a variety of other state programs that depend on the quality of the count in the census for allocation of funds. We believe this program will help keep Minnesota's undercount at its absolute lowest level and increase accuracy for more equitable and distribution of federal programs and state dollars.
Thank you. You ready? Mr. Gillespie, I asked a question about the possibility of statistical correction of the census count. Is there, and I know there was an issue about this being forbidden on the federal level, but what about on the state level?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the Supreme Court has in 1999 ruled, and this is not the first time they've ruled in this direction, but they did rule in 1999 that statistical sampling and adjustment cannot be used for reapportionment purposes. They said nothing about state activities or federal distribution of dollars or other programs. However, the political ramifications, there has not been such a statistical adjustment done. One of the questions that arises in statistical adjustment, depending upon the level of geography at which we'd like to make the adjustment, is whether or not we are actually on firm ground at making an adjustment. For congressional redistricting, for example, redistricting is done at a block level, and at that level, the statistical quality of any adjustment would be much less than simply using the raw counts to start with. Which is one of the reasons why the Supreme Court ruled as it did.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Mr. Gillespie, as this is not directly on this proposal, but since you're here, as a demographer, I understand that you're aware and you and Tom Simpson, the state economist, and other senior staff are all up for retirement at roughly the same time, and I'm wondering if there is a plan in place to institutionalize your knowledge and prepare for those changes.
Representative, Madam Chair, thank you for the inquiry. That is something that Mr. Stinson and I have talked about at great length. There is some interest in the department administration and other departments for dealing with this issue. It's not just the two of us, it's actually the people that we work with as well. And that does represent an issue. And one of the possibilities is to look for places where there may be people with the basic knowledge to begin training. That is something that we'll try to be working with the University of Minnesota, for example, in their population center at the University of Minnesota, which is now growing at a fairly rapid pace to see what their potential is.
Representative Bingham?
Madam Chair, Mr. Gillespie, I had a couple questions on the previous testimony on the budget that the commissioner thought you'd be a better resource for. Regarding the census, do we get federal dollars, matching dollars for the program? Or for the process, not program.
Representative Madam Chair, the census does not give us matching dollars for a promotional program. They do, however, in the past, have attached liaison people with us, and so that there was Census Bureau staff during the 2000 census, and we work very closely with them. We do coordinate our activities very closely. We're actually already beginning to work on the 2010 census. One program called LUCA, which is a local update of addresses to make sure that the maps that cities and townships have are correct and up to date. And one of the things that we'll be working with the Census Bureau on is training local officials and providing technical assistance to them in making sure that they are capable of updating their maps to the fullest extent possible, so that we can begin to start with the most accurate basis. This is essential, since the census is a mail-out, mail-back census, and knowing exactly what city or township each address is in, and also making sure where people might live in advance says a great deal about whether or not the final product will be an accurate and full count of people. But no, we do not have a matching dollar program, although we do, the Census Bureau will have a promotional campaign. We will be coordinating with them.
Okay. Madam Chair, one follow-up. Madam Chair, Mr. Simpson, I know you touched on the LUCA, is that what you called it? But is there any other, I'm just curious if there's any other advancements in technology that the department is going to use or has been trained or it's been developed to help along the process?
Representative, Madam Chair, one of the major improvements in the census over the last couple decades has been in the use of geographic information centers, systems, GIS programs to more accurately target the populations. We will also be using that to help target special interest populations, difficult to count populations. There are some parts of Minnesota that are physically difficult to count, simply because the count is done in April and ice out becomes an issue as to whether or not you can deliver mail, and it's a mail out, mail back census. So that becomes an issue. But there are also new populations who speak languages other than English. There are people who may be reserved about contacting with a federal or state official, and the objective of the census is to make sure we get a full and accurate count and a complete count of population. So we'll be utilizing all available sources of technology to do that.
Okay, there are two. First of all, going back to the statistical correction, I guess I can believe you about the block level, but what about the town level and, you know, city level for LGA type calculations? What about that? Would statistical correction get you something that's better?
Mm-hmm.
You missed my speech on how I'm a big expert on this because I've done statistical censuses in bat caves.
Sure.
But I admit it's a long time ago and it was pretty simplistic arithmetic. So,
Madam Chair, members of the committee, in fact, one of the things that the Census Bureau does is very much like what was done with estimating a bat population. The census is a mail-out, mail-back kind of census. We do the best job we can to make sure everybody is counted, but then the Census Bureau also does a follow-up survey called the ACE, Accuracy Coverage Evaluation Survey. And the idea there is to gain some notion as to where potential problems may have occurred and how to improve the census over time. That is in terms of the overall count, which is one source of error, and for which we will have some parameters coming out at the end of the census. Another source of error is the geographic misallocation of people, and there that's a little more difficult to correct. We need to know which cave, in fact, the bats came out of. Is for example an equivalent concept. Making sure that each city and township and state gets allocated the people who are actually residents of those states. One question for Minnesota is, in April, when the forms are sent out, some people in Minnesota are in temporarily residing in another state, for example, in Arizona, and we would like for them to fill out the form here and not in Arizona and be counted there if they're in fact permanent residents. And so, you know, part of the issue is make sure people are counted in the correct place, and that is something that is not corrected by the statistical undercount correction programs.
Then another issue, and is this only an issue on the federal level, or could it be looked at the state issue, is the place of where people in prisons should be counted.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, that is a question that has come up. People in group quarter facilities and institutions and in college dorms and such are counted according to and have been traditionally so counted according to the facility in which they reside. The question has come up concerning prisons. And the question asked, should not prisoners be reallocated back to their original residence? And one of the issues that has arisen is the fact that there simply just is not data to do that. I explored that with our corrections department. I believe it was about a year ago, there simply just wasn't the data to be able to get an exact address as to where the person would have resided, since this ultimately would need to go down to a block level if it's going to affect congressional redistricting or legislative redistricting. If not legislative redistricting or congressional redistricting, then if it's simply a program reallocation, it may be possible to reallocate to a city or township level. But I'm not aware that those data fully exist either.
Okay. Any other questions of Mr. Gillespie? Okay, does the quorum present, Representative Zellers, move the adoption of the amendment of the minutes? Sorry. All those in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passed.
Okay. Madam Chair, thank you so much. We have two other items. We're going to change cast of characters here while they come forward, if you don't mind. I want to emphasize that this, while it is being carried by the Department of Administration, is a request on behalf of 22 agencies for a enterprise-wide real property system. So with that, I'll turn it over to Assistant Commissioner Giancola.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, again, my name is Nikki Giancola. I'm an assistant commissioner in the Department of Administration. And I can't tell you how excited I am to be here to present this initiative to you. It's a real property enterprise system initiative. As Commissioner Badgerow mentioned, this request is being made by the Department of Administration, but it really is on behalf of all 22 agencies in the state of Minnesota that holds custodial control of property. With me here today is Bill Olson from the Department of Human Services and Dick Coast from the Department of Transportation, as well as Mike Ryan in the audience from the Office of Enterprise Technology. We have been working for approximately 18 months on this project. It's an initiative as part of the Drive to Excellence. And I'm just going to walk through the program scope, the request itself, some of the features and benefits, and I'm going to wrap it up with some screenshots so that you can actually see the system that we're proposing to use here. First of all, real estate is it represents one of the state's largest investments. As in most large organizations, I believe it's very likely only second to staff. Comprehensive, accessible, and accurate information is essential if we're going to make financially responsible and operationally efficient decisions in the state. As I mentioned previously, today in Minnesota, 22 agencies own property, including over 5,000 buildings. Each one has its own version of information management and methods and tools. In your packet, there is a sheet that just references those 22 agencies and the property holdings that they have. Again, as I mentioned, currently the state property is tracked using a variety of systems. They're all disconnected. They're anything from a standalone facility management type system to a spreadsheet to an access database. These storage devices are siloed, somewhat like the agencies. They're inconsistent in their content and application, and in most cases, they're not real-time. In addition, due to format differences, they're obviously not compatible with one another, so it makes reporting to you and to decision-makers in the state virtually impossible. In addition, we've got a whole lot of multiple entry of data going on, redundant searching for information, and it's resulting in a tremendous loss of our precious resource time. Again, as part of the Drive to Excellence initiative, an executive order was issued in April of 2005 to address two things. The first was the need for a web-enabled shared technology tool, and the second was development of a corresponding governance structure. And the objective is to provide the state with a single version, finally, of its real estate and real property holdings, and it would serve as a common source to assist in making decisions at an enterprise level. This budget request is $6.7 million total for the biennium. 5.6 of that is for the initial purchase and implementation of an integrated workplace management system. It's also known as a computer-aided facility management system, for those of you that may have heard that acronym, CAFM. We're proposing to use the Archibus FM software in conjunction with what is called capital planning and facility condition assessment software provided by a company called VFA. All of this is to be implemented with a local consultant here called ADSI. It's a local firm, again, that the state of Minnesota already has an established relationship with, and it would be implemented on an enterprise-wide level. The system will provide us this critically needed technology infrastructure necessary to support and improve the four major categories of facilities management-related activities that most organizations, including government, have to deal with. The first being project management, which encompasses design, construction, bidding, procurement, all of those things that go into design and construction. Also supports real estate and portfolio management. This is the area that's dealing with lease analysis, RFP, and life cycle costing analysis and strategic planning. The third piece is facilities and space management. This would encompass space management, the whole process of moves, adds, and changes. IT inventory, site and employee services, physical security assessments, environmental health and safety, and emergency management. And the fourth piece is maintenance management. This is at an operational level, the preventive and predictive maintenance that takes place. It's warranty management, work order administration, and maintenance scheduling. All of this being said, bottom line, it's the common database and workflows that are required in order to be able to provide timely, accurate information for the state's 5,000-plus buildings and all of the land associated with the buildings. I need to note here that this is not at this time including agency-specific lands such as the DNR wetlands or the DOT right-of-way lands. It will provide the state, finally, with a global view of its assets and a wealth of tools for managing those assets. I believe that this clearly supports good, efficient government. We need to share information with one another. We need to have access to it. It needs to be transparent. And the only practical way to do this is through IT. The state currently owns about 31 million square feet of space at a conservative $200 a square foot replacement value. We're talking about a $6.2 billion minimum level of property investment for the state. A $5.6 million investment in a management tool represents less than one-tenth of 1%. It's a minor amount in comparison to what we're trying to manage here. The benefits are many, including reduced operating expenses, improved workflow, and lower capital project requests.
Representative Lefar.
Madam Chair, thank you, Ms. Giancola. Welcome back. I know that last term we talked about the state's property management in some detail, and I think we all agree it isn't where it should be. Refresh my memory, what is the current system, for example? Who decides for any particular agency what to lease and how to lease it, under what terms? I mean, is that fragmented and left up to the particular agencies? And if you can give me an example of a particular agency, how do they do that? How do they decide what to lease and under what terms?
Madam Chair, Representative LaForest, leasing is one area where we are better at working on an enterprise. There is a real estate management organization within the Department of Administration that does the majority of leasing on behalf of state agencies, but I believe in the Department of Natural Resources and sometimes in the Department of Transportation. Those decisions are left up to the agency. In the Department of Administration, there's a fairly rigorous process tracking in somewhat of a manual format lease expirations, and our real estate management group has a tickler file of when those are coming up due. They contact the agency. They work with the particular agency, whether it be issuing an RFP, doing a lease versus buy analysis. But it's at that point pretty rudimentary. They don't have any electronic tools to help them. They don't have any analysis tools. They don't hire consultants to come in and help them with that process. So, again, leasing for the state is somewhat centralized within the Department of Administration, and I think my partners here would say that it's working fairly well that way, but there are some exceptions to that. And I believe that a tool would help us, if nothing more than share information, so that we all know when a lease is coming due. For instance, if we all knew and could see that a lease was coming due in northern Minnesota, we might be able to get together even electronically and look at that and say, boy, if that was for the DNR, maybe the DOT has space nearby. Maybe Human Services in one of their areas has space available. Today we can't do that. It's pretty much what we get from the agency to deal with what we know about the landlords and the lease itself, and we work it from there. I believe a tool would help enhance that greatly.
And Madam Chair, I just make a comment. I think Commissioner Badgerow and Ms. Giancola know we've had these discussions in the past, and it seems to me that this is one area in which we can reap substantial savings. I mean, if you think about it, who here would hire a real estate agent to help us look for a house? And if that real estate agent didn't look at comparable properties to see if you were getting a good deal on a price, they'd probably be sued for negligence. Yet we lease millions of feet of office space every year, and we have people doing it who have no expertise or any kind of training in negotiating leases. We're pretty much flying blind as a state, and it seems to me that we can come up with some sort of system. The details can be worked out with this committee, but we ought to have a centralized system where people who know what they're talking about, who understand the difference between a gross lease and a triple net lease and other things, know what that means negotiating on behalf of the state. I think we're getting taken to the cleaners, and especially, Madam Chair, you remember last year we had a document produced that showed some of the lease rates that the state was paying in some of the commercial districts in St. Paul and Minneapolis. It's out of hand, and Madam Chair, you also recall that Judge Krause has appeared before this body, and he has pleaded with this committee to get him out of his real estate. His offices are housed in downtown Minneapolis in some swanky office space, and he has begged this committee pretty much on his hands and knees to get him over to the Department of Revenue, where we already own the darn building. He said, please. Did we finally get him out of there?
Yes.
All right. We saved one soul, but members, you get my point. I mean, I think we can obviously reap some savings here if we can centralize the system and get some people with some expertise to help us out.
Well, I think, you know, why is it, and I know we went over this thoroughly last year, but why is it when I look at it again, I have a sense of shock of how this could not have been done 10 years ago, 20 years ago, whatever. So, welcome to the face of government. Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, I have some questions about the cost of the system, and I'm wondering if now would be a good time to address some of those issues or wait until the end of the presentation.
Okay. Well, go ahead.
I'll take the question.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I refer to page 13 of the budget books that we were sent out. I agree with Representative DeForest that this is something whose benefits are very clear. But I'm curious about some of the numbers of implementing the system. And I do agree with the point that this amount of money compared to the total real estate portfolio of the state is relatively minor. That doesn't mean we shouldn't make sure that we're getting the best possible deal we can for this expenditure as well. As I look at the table at the bottom of page 13, I see that in fiscal year 2008, there is a budget of $758,000 for software, which I would assume to be for software licenses of one kind or another. Then I see $4.4 million for services. And what I'm curious about is why there's $4.4 million of services, which also apparently does not include training for state employees, in order to purchase software of $800,000. And so that's sort of an opening question that maybe you can explain how this breaks down and how this cost and implementation is conceived.
Madam Chair and Representative. That's a great question. We went through a very rigorous RFP process. In these categories, we tried to take the results of the successful respondent and put those into categories. Now, I do know that software, that line item does include licenses. I'm less clear about all the things that are in services, but it's clearly implementation costs. It's conversion of existing data, be it in these spreadsheets and access databases, whatever it is, even an existing system. It's converting all that into the enterprise system. And I know there are other things in there, and we certainly could get you the breakdown of what is all encompassed in that services line.
I think you want that, don't
you? I would like that.
Yes,
Madam Chair.
And get that to both Brian and to Representative Winkler.
And, Madam Chair, a follow-up question. Under the hardware line in the same table, it's round terms $1 million a year for hardware from 2009 going forward. And my understanding is that this is a web-based system, and I'm wondering what the $1 million per year in hardware costs would be.
Madam Chair and Representative, again, it's a great question. Some of it is server environment. We have selected OET to host the system. We did a competition on that piece as well. But there is clearly hardware that needs to be purchased for all the agencies in order to work on a compatible level. So we can include that in our response to you as well, what all is included in hardware.
Thank you, ma'am.
We have that broken down.
I would appreciate that.
And I guess we'd kind of like to see what you submitted to OET and what their comments were on that also.
Okay.
In terms of the, just kind of looking to see how that whole system, works.
Breaks down.
Okay.
Madam Chair, if I will, as you know, this was the first year that OET really did a rigorous review of all the IT requests, and this one scored extremely high in that review, and we have Mr. Ryan here from OET, but we won't take the time today to go into that. We have all that information.
Send us the ones that scored extremely low, too.
Madam Chair, I don't think they made the governor's budget.
Oh, well. Okay. Yes.
I thought I'd run through just very quickly a summary of the benefits. As I said before, the benefits to the state are tremendous, almost infinite. I just wanted to pick out and highlight a few of them. Having a system would allow us finally to create a strategic master plan, not for an agency, not for a department, but for the state. We would need this complete inventory that the system would provide in order to do that, but we would finally have the ability to create a master plan for the state. The facility condition assessment portion of the system would allow us to identify and rank maintenance, capital renewal and renovation projects. It would allow us to estimate financial requirements and to more accurately establish capital plans. Included in the facility condition assessments and capital planning module of this, technology has caught up, and now there's this ability to include current and standard industry cost information, for instance, RS means, others that do cost estimating in the industry. It's embedded right in the tool, and so it would provide us current and standard construction and repair cost estimates. Ultimately, what that would allow us to do, if we're all using the same baseline data, the same cost information, we could finally allocate funds based on the need and level of deficiency in an accurate way. The system would also allow us to finally standardize our construction drawings. We'd have consistent drawings. We'd have consistent information standards for all of our major facilities. We would improve turnaround time and cost savings through better resource management. The system would allow us to provide all, including you, employees, legislature, any state person, to put in a self-service request for service, be it I have a light out, I spilled something, I'm hot or cold. Today you need to call someone to do that. With the system, you can enter that, you can track it on your own, and having that information in the system rather than on a piece of paper that will ultimately get tossed, we'll be able to track how that's going for us in each agency. We can trend. We can do analysis to serve all of you and government better. a minute ago, the state demographer talked about employee retention. That is a key piece here. We conservatively estimate over 1,500 users that would use the system on either a daily or weekly basis. And if the predictions hold to have retirements up to 50% by the year 2015, having a system that would capture and retain this intellectual property is critical. Otherwise, it just walks out the door. We'd have a permanent storage bank, if you will, for all of that knowledge. Another feature of the system is obviously reduced search time. If we have agencies today that are using paper, pencil, access databases, it takes a whole lot more time when we get a request from anywhere to fulfill that request. In a system, it's a matter of it's there. You just have to figure out how to request the report. Once you have it, you can save it. Many of our requests are asked over and over again, and this would allow us to provide that a lot faster than what we can today.
And will this work so that if someone makes a request for an electrician to change something, to change something, and it turns out that when he arrives there that there's a bookcase that needs to be moved, that and he's not allowed to move the bookcase, you know, that the people who move the bookcase will be there at the same time? I know this kind of sounds like an anti-union regulation statement, and I'm not supposed to do those things, but every once in a while, something just offends my sense. I think in the case I heard of the people in the office, just even though they were small women, just moved it themselves.
Well, Madam Chair, if I may, I'd like to move into some screenshots, because that's a great point. Today, if you get a request that comes in over the phone and it's simply, I need an outlet moved, You have no idea what's in the way. You need to send a technician to survey the space. They may or may not be able to fulfill the request and do the work. I want to show you something that I think would help facilitate that in a much more accurate and timely manner.
Okay, we'll get to the questions that I know are on the floor. Representative Zeller.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. It was actually right along that point, and maybe it's because I grew up on a farm, but any time I hear the words government and master plan, a chill goes right down my spine. In this case, however, I see the benefit. My concern is exactly the line of questioning the chair was on. Integration, education, and buy-in. If this is seen as I'm being replaced by a computer board, or the efficiencies will be the pushback, along the line of what Representative Winkler was discussing, the cost and training, what kind of, have you anticipated in that the huge upfront cost of training access? If it's a simplistic system, maybe it's not necessary, but that's a concern that, you know, we can put the greatest things in the world into the law, and, you know, how they are implemented and how we go about them is a completely different thing.
Madam Chair, Representative, I'd like to ask Bill Olson to answer that question. Bill, again, is from the Department of Human Services. He's been through an implementation, and I think he could talk clearly about the training. I personally don't feel like people would think it's taking over my job. This would be an enhancement for them, and they know their fellow workers, you know, many of them will be leaving. I'm sure they're struggling with, how am I going to deal with it? This would be a tool that would help them deal with it.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bill Olson. I'm a physical plant operations manager for the Department of Human Services. Been involved with this particular program since 1998 and have gone through implementations at ADMIN, Department of Human Services, Department of Corrections, and the Minnesota Veterans Homes Board. The direction that we're heading with this is as simplistic as we can make it. In other words, most of you probably had some training in Word or Excel. How many have ever had any training in the Internet? Not many of us have, and that's where we're going with this. We'll try to keep it as simple as we possibly can for users to be able to access the information, be able to track the information, and those types of things too. So again, if we aren't making this simple and it's becoming a real tool for the end users and the people that are looking for the information to make decisions, we've really missed the mark. This program does that, and I've seen it. We use it on a daily basis at all of the facilities that I oversee, which are Moose Lake, Cambridge, and St. Peter, on a daily basis, and we're not using it yet to its full capacity, but it is really a useful tool for us. we're also finding, too, is that the question comes up, like computerization means, you know, we're going to do more with computers and less with people. What we're finding is that by implementing these types of programs, we're able to justify what we're doing. In other words, if we're finding out that we're not getting enough done, maybe it's because we don't have enough people rather than taking people away. And it works both ways on that type of a situation. So, again, the program from the very ground level, the electrician out there doing his work, or the highest level of legislators making decisions, the information is there and set up in such a way that you're not having to go through a lot of information to find what you're looking for.
And I'm sure just to follow up, and Mr. is it Owen?
Olson,
I'm sorry. Gee, I'm not a Minnesota name at all. My apologies. As far as the time, you know, again, the cost I can understand, some of the training may just be on the job, here's the new system, but as far as the timeline, I mean, what have you seen in some of your past experiences, whether, you know, at any of the levels, you know, how long are we talking about for uptick on this when people actually see it, get it, and are able to work within the system? Is it weeks, months, years?
Madam Chair, Representative, it's we've always tried to roll these out in a very small pieces, if you will, too. So you kind of take one piece of it, and then it just kind of grows. To use the system like this, the way it's designed, you're talking probably hours to get up and operational on this. It's really not a big deal. Again, it's all Internet-based, so you can go in and click. It's very intuitive as far as where it's taking you. The other thing is that for most users, while the program itself is very large, we really scale that down to just what that individual user really needs. So he's only looking at the work orders or maybe space management or the real estate management portion, so you're not having to go through the whole program too, which also helps.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Olson. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, thank you. I just had a couple of brief questions regarding the system, Ms. Giancola. Is this will inventory only the buildings that the state owns but not leased space. Is that correct or incorrect?
Madam Chair, Representative, of course, it will hold both state-owned and non-state-owned information.
Okay.
Obviously, with the state-owned properties, there's a whole lot of standard data that we would want to capture for the state-owned facilities. But there is also in this planning portion of the system, the lease analysis, the lease abstracts, the dates that the leases are coming due, it automatically triggers you when so many months ahead of time, depending on your process, to take a look at those leases. It holds landlord information. It holds all sorts of financial data, and it allows you to financially model that as well.
And so, Madam Chair, just a brief follow-up. So then a state agency would have the ability with the system to say, hey, we are looking for lease space potentially in downtown St. Paul, and that person be able to say, well, the Department of Health got this particular lease in this building, or Corrections got a lease in this building, and let you compare some numbers and give you some information and then negotiating leverage.
Absolutely.
Okay. Great.
Or even better, there's a state-owned building that has space in Virginia.
That's right.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Okay, as I said, I'll just finish up here with some screenshots. Hopefully you can, the data is, I mean, the writing is small, but I just want you to have the idea here. This is what we call an example of a dashboard view. It's configurable based on the user. These examples that I'm going to run you through, the first four slides, are actually private sector examples, but they all demonstrate the very powerful business intelligence that's inherent in these systems, and public sector can surely benefit from it as well. Up here, the pie chart in the top here is illustrates properties by use. For instance, you could set this up if you wanted to see a comparison of office, warehouse, garage, parking facilities, vacant space. You can configure this based on what works for you. This particular example is of a department manager in the real estate group. The bar chart down below here is illustrating property by value. You could easily replace that and set it up for yourself, but you could see replacement value of properties. You could see the amount of deferred maintenance. You could see capital investment over a specific period of time. You would choose. the property abstract information in this area here shows all the details about a property, whether it's leased or owned. Wouldn't it be nice to have this available for all employees or even the public? You could include directions to the building. You could have a photo of the building. And this system is even capable of pulling in GIS data that would help direct people to some of our more remote locations. And then on the bottom here is just a snapshot of some building performance metrics, if you will. The possibilities are here are almost endless. You would set up metrics, and then you would be able to show those on your dashboard view. This could be your opening page every day if you so choose. The next slide is showing a little bit more about these metrics or key performance indicators. This is actionable information now for managers to use to guide performance. For instance, if you're a manager with, say, five facilities, you can get those five on your dashboard. If you're a commissioner that has an entire agency responsibility, you could roll all this up and see your entire agency. If you're a leasing manager, you could set this to alert you, as I said, of lease expirations or expense escalation or triggers such as the leases are due at a particular time in negotiation. And then again, if you're a building manager who needs quick and daily access to their work request status or their preventive maintenance completion, you could set this up for yourself on a screen such as this. This happens to be at a department manager level, and this person has set it up to see a variety of alerts and metrics. The next one illustrates a budget by program report in both grid and chart form. It would allow you to review and project out budgets for specific building systems. This one is a little tough to see, but in color, down in this area right here, you're actually seeing that there is an awful lot of budget requested out here. The green is representing hazardous materials or asbestos abatement. The light blue here is utilities. It just gives you a graphic of that. Again, if you would rather look at it by program, that's what this is demonstrating over in this area. The condition assessment information that I referenced earlier feeds up into this. Our building staff within the agencies would collect condition assessment information. Once it's in, it would feed up into a system. And as I mentioned earlier, the current industry standard cost information would load in here. And you would get a sense by agency or finance or the legislature of just how many dollars you're talking about. It also provides, I believe, a compelling view of the outstanding needs of the various building systems. And on a global level, I really believe that this would provide decision makers a tool that they've never had before, a statewide view of the condition of all of our assets. This next screenshot is a building and floor inventory. This particular one is showing rooms by a standard. The color coding is a standard. For instance, if you were tasked with reconfiguring a floor for a new occupant, you could electronically measure and calculate the gross rentable and usable square footages right off of a CAD drawing such as this. You could show circulation space, private offices, cubicles. It would give you a very accurate basis on which you could charge back for rental. It would help enforce office standards in terms of space. It would facilitate emergency planning. You could pull this up and diagram out exiting paths. All of this is done on paper today. This would be electronic. You could also keep track of your inventory, be it furniture, fixtures, equipment, data, telecom. Some of the numbers here I'm certain are referencing data telecom that would allow IT to, rather than physically having to go inventory a space, pull it up on a screen, do their inventory, and start tracking. It would also provide a visual for vendors and bidders. Today, if they're even sent a visual, typically they come look at whatever they're bidding on. This, in the future, could provide them a way to see what it is. that they're proposing to bid on. This next screenshot is actually a version of a work request. I referenced it earlier. Again, this is where you as a state employee could enter your name, theoretically all of your associated information, including where you reside, would be loaded in here, and then that would be electronically sent to a technician to fulfill the request. This shot is illustrating all of the details that are collected currently with regard to a work order. Again, we're capturing it electronically, not on a piece of paper. So you're seeing when the work order was created here, when it was issued, its priority, the completion date over here, the costing information. All of this can be integrated with inventory management systems so that you can track supply levels and alert people to restock. The information, again, is retained for history. You can build a case for a capital budget request based on a roll-up of all of these. It would allow us leverage for contracting if we had all of that financial information. And pretty importantly, it would help us to more efficiently schedule and assign our resources. This final screenshot is simply a days to close report. This one is actually from the Capitol complex. I don't know if it's actually from the Capitol building. It's key in our world for performance management. But more importantly, with this kind of information on an enterprise level, we'd be able to calculate averages and do a better job of forecasting, leading to better and more efficient staffing. So,
okay. Any questions? Okay. You know, instead of continuing in the, because we're not sure we'll finish this agency today, we started late, but I think I'll go to the issue of LMIC and GMS because and GIS because I know that there are a set of people who are picked here who have come today to speak about this, and we'd specifically like to be able to hear from them. So we'd like to hear the departments and Commissioner, one of the things that we're now asking agencies, and we didn't sort of decided to do this yesterday as it was examining the budget book and thinking about budget books in the past, thinking about what we had, and so we didn't think we had to it was quite fair to bring it on you while you were sitting at the desk or walking down the hall, but we are going to ask everyone appearing before us now to say that we would like to see we don't want to see all your work papers, but we do want to see what you submitted as the agency request to finance and the governor. So that will be a request from. So we're making it retroactively to you, and we do expect to see that.
Madam Chair and members, that would be fine. And in this particular case, we did submit a request for continued funding of Land Management Information Center at the level authorized by the legislature last year. So we'd be happy to provide that. That was not approved by the governor. Okay. I don't want to spend a lot of time because I know there are a lot of people who feel very passionately about this function and want to testify because they're the users. They're the people who actually benefit from the services provided by Land Management Information Center. But I just want to quickly put in context, why is it that this seeming reduction is here when we don't have a change item before you? And it's really very simple. This describes what Land Management Information Center does. Suffice it to say that they provide services to citizens, local units of government, planning departments across the state, universities, scholars, and others, and they are the state's repository of a rich database of very many, many layered, multi-layered geographic information and standards. Let me just quickly go to talk about how we got here. Basically, last year the governor had in fact proposed a reduction in the Land Management Information Center budget, which neither the Senate nor the House agreed with, and did restore a portion of their general fund budget, but did it on a one-time basis only. And so for that reason, the governor simply agreed to continue that legislative mandate from last year. So I just have to say that we are here because of the legislature's action last year in making that restoration one time. I only want to point out one other fact, and then I really want the users to be able to have their voice, to say that this does not zero out the Land Management Information Center. It does, in its general fund activity, minimally fund it at $258,000 a year, which is really only about 1.5 people plus the system support. On the other hand, there is still a service bureau that is funded by clients and grants on a fee-for-service basis. So there is an activity that would continue irrespective of what this committee or what the legislature does with respect to the general fund. So I just wanted to, just in the interest of full disclosure, their service bureau budget for the business plan for the next biennium is $1.272 million. So with that, Madam Chair, I think I'll go to black here and simply, unless there are any questions of me, yield the podium.
Okay. We do have the people from the department in Limerick who are here to start us out. And now, I just do think it's a little, first of all, it's amazing to have this coming right after the other one, which is showing us this wonderful information system that we're going to have for buildings, and we're kind of at least partially discarding this very similar and more complex information system that we've had for land, which I think probably many more people are dependent on than the people who are dependent on the state information system for buildings. I do think it's a little, you know, if the governor zeroed it out and the legislature, and of course I wasn't in this highest level of deciding, of putting those final bills together, but the legislature for some reason decided because of constraints on what was allowed to be carried forward, they could only do one-time funding. I'm not quite sure that that's fair to say that was a legislative decision as opposed to the gubernatorial decision of to not fund it at all. But
Madam Chair, you'll notice that in my presentation I had not juxtaposed them, maybe yes, for that very reason, but also to say that the legislature did not fully restore funding last year, so there was also a reduction in the amount of funding. We had not intended for the Land Management Information Center staff to testify, knowing that there was their constituents were here and were probably going to speak pretty passionately on their behalf. But David Arbeit, the director of the group, is here, and if you'd like to hear from him, that
yes,
would be fine.
I guess I would like him to at least start, and then we'll go to some of the users. Mr. Arbeit. Yes. Ms. Bitten.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Oh, I better hit the mute button. Goes to my rookiness. Being that there's a few first-time members here, maybe you could, when Mr. Director, when you do discuss this topic, if you could maybe give a little brief history for some of the new folks.
Thank you. I was going to suggest that. Thank you for making sure I did. Yeah. Mr. Arbeit.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is David Arbeit. I direct what's now the Office of Geographic and Demographic Analysis and the Land Management Information Center, which is one of the units within that office. The State Demographer's Office is also in that Office of Geographic and Demographic Analysis. I came here 14 years ago as the second ever director of LEMIC, as it's known, which was an organization established in 1978, I believe, after actually beginning as a ambitious research project at the university to inventory lakeshore lands and develop a way to assess the impact of development around Minnesota's lakes. That was at a time when there was no such thing as a geographic information system. And LEMIC at the university, and then later when it was moved to state government, was one of the few places in the country that actually began to develop the technology that now is called GIS. It was a pioneer in the field. It was recognized as such. It continues to be recognized as such. And in 1978, I think it was, the legislature decided that technology and that information had so much value to the state that the Land Management Information Center was created as, at the time, the only place where that technology was capable of being deployed. And its initial mission focused on developing an inventory of land use for the state, that could be used by state agency programs and also local units of government to assess the development impacts on all land in Minnesota. Shortly after that, Minnesota, at the Land Management Information Center, with in partnership with the university, developed the first ever anywhere inventory of land use for an entire state in a digital form. And that opened up the doors to being able to do the kind of analysis that we now see relative to environmental protection programs, growth management issues, planning, land use, traffic modeling, and as you just recently saw, being opened up the door to linking systems that are designed to support business functions like real property management and be able to add to it the ability to show where the property is, to be able to generate reports about assets within particular locations, being able to begin to think about how to more efficiently cluster services relative to populations, market area studies, and that sort of thing. And over the years, since the late 70s, other state agencies had begun to adopt FIRST and now have fully integrated GIS into their own operations. Appropriately, I might add. One of the consequences of that is that the role of the Land Management Information Center, or LMIC, has really evolved into from a situation where agencies came to us as the exclusive purveyor of this technology instead to rely on us more to provide them with the infrastructure and coordination services that allow them to do their business and to develop their applications. So you see now GIS being used by the Department of Natural Resources, not as a client of LMIC, but as a partner of LMIC, that they partner with us on developing databases that can be shared by other organizations, both state agencies, local units of government, and I might add private sector as well, to support everything from MapQuest applications. MapQuest is the GIS. The data that they use, some of it is actually originates with data that was developed by states. Google Earth, Google Maps, all this imagery that you see being used in weather reports and very often in news reports where you zoom in from space onto images of locations within the U.S. If it's in Minnesota, it's probably data that was developed in partnership with work that we've done. And so our role has sort of evolved into more of a technology coordination function. We still do what we had done in terms of maintaining core data sets, but we also we're an enabling organization that helps other organizations figure out what we need collectively to make strategic investments that we can share. So some more recent things that we've done have been partner with other state agencies, the Department of Transportation, DNR, and PCA, to assemble some state funding to match up with some federal funding to acquire aerial photographs for the entire state that are now used by every county in the state for their local planning activities. The data is housed, among other places, at LMIC. We provide it through download web services that offer it through downloads. And it's a data set that has value that we've estimated in terms of just the time saved in terms of being able to get this data from LMIC through our web services, $8 million a year. Our function is we also support the Minnesota Governor's Council on Geographic Information, which is a major important coordinating entity with 18 appointed members and 5 ex officio members to coordinate the technology within the state and represent the state in as a state liaison with federal agencies where federal agencies are also seeking partnerships within the state to develop data that they need and also that's needed locally. And we've been very successful in that regard. So much of our work now focuses on coordination, but we are a data and services broker for any organization pretty much that you can identify that's using GIS right now. You heard the state demographer talk about how they use it. You heard the real estate management initiative identify how it's being used there. We're working now with the Department of Homeland Security. In fact, 3 weeks ago, we stood up a service that basically provides maps to the Department of Homeland Security into the Emergency Operations Center, something that they had not previously been able to do. And more our work is focusing on strategic thinking about this technology in partnership with the Office of Enterprise Technology. We're in the middle right now of a process that will produce a strategic plan for geospatial technology or GIS technology for the state. We're intending to hold a strategic planning retreat in April, and that should continue through next year and provide really a roadmap for all of us as we think about how to make best use of this technology. So those are some of the things that we do. I might add that we are responsible for almost 90,000 downloads of data in fiscal 06, and that means data that's being used locally, not just by state agencies, but locally, compared with 100 data set distributions when I came here 14 years ago. So it's a dramatic change. We're doing a lot more with a lot less. So that's what we do.
Okay. Representative Ford.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry, I missed your name.
My name is David Arbeit.
Okay, David, thank you. You mentioned that that your agency is now working with Homeland Security, Federal Homeland Security.
That's right.
Are there any federal dollars available to your agency working for projects with them?
Madam Chair, Representative, actually, yeah, we are beginning to work in that direction. I had submitted a year ago a proposal for, if you could excuse the acronym, it's called GEOCOP, for Geo Common Operating Picture, as part of the state's, as a proposal through the state to the Federal Department of Homeland Security for, I think it was $2 million a year in funding to actually support a statewide capability to provide GIS into the Emergency Operations Center. It was not funded last year, but we're working closely with Homeland Security right now with some smaller grants to incrementally build in towards that direction, and we hope to be able to apply for something similar this year.
Sure. So those dollars are not included in your funding base. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Representative, no, they're not. And in fact, without adequate funding, we would no longer be in a position to broker these kinds of relationships.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. I think that's your... Okay. Representative Dollars.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Arbeit, in your presentation, you answered at least half or part of my question about, you know, using other agencies, but... once you GPS the land, you don't need to go back over and redo the data and do the flyovers. But as GIS is being more widely used by cities, counties, and I come from a growing area up in the northwest suburbs where the more we can lay all these grids on top of each other with utilities and sewer and cable and you name it, I see you being more valuable, not that all branches of government aren't very valuable, but for some of our cities and localities, I see your services being much more valuable than ever. And when I see that you're going from 8 to 1 FTE, that's kind of scary. Can you reassure me and the committee that you are working? You maybe not be the gatekeeper for all the data and everybody comes to you, but that if you're using somebody at another agency, that your good works are still going on out there.
Madam Chair, Representative Ziller. I guess I can give you partial assurance in the form that other agencies are actively deploying the technology. Local units of government certainly are increasingly deploying it within Maple Grove, which is where I think you come from. Within the entire metro, there is an organization that we helped initiate called Metro GIS that is working to coordinate among local units of government within the Metro. We provide support to and participate with Metro GIS, but at least that activity would continue. But I think an important ingredient would be missing.
Thank you. And just one other question, Madam Chair, and I actually asked Commissioner Bedrow this last week when it comes to working with the DNR and some of the GIS in the lakes, and you know we use GPS technology now on our boats. Is that as looking at your budget now more than ever? Maybe we should start selling off some of these the maps of the lakes and the topography of the bottom of the lake. Is it something that you know is a revenue source or as a service? I guess. That you provide as a, maybe even in this case to make up from your budget actually.
Madam Chair, Representative Zeller, actually the DNR does provide lake maps, as I think you already know, and the DNR would likely be the organization that would develop that kind of application, although we would help them with that. To speak to the issue of supporting the this core operation with revenues, I'd like to do that because it is a persistent question, of course, and it is absolutely sure that we can continue to provide some services on a cost recovery basis, and certainly any revenues help offset any appropriation we get. But what is missing here and what is actually in many respects needs to be enhanced rather than reduced is the coordination function. This is a very sophisticated technology that requires a great deal of expertise to not just operate but also to identify opportunities where it can be add value to other functions. And a good example is the real property management system. When that RFP was initially being developed, the GIS link was not part of the thinking of the core group, at least not evident that it was. And we managed to, myself and one of my other staff people, managed to be invited by Assistant Commissioner Giancola to participate in the process. And as a result, we added a whole component to the specs that required the solution to be provide the ability to map the properties and to also generate reports based on geography of value, condition, and that sort of thing. And that's the same thing that happened with the Homeland Security and Emergency Management Agency. They would not have known that there were opportunities to bring the technology to bear to the business unless there was some organization doing something like what we do. And that can't be funded by revenues. Otherwise, it sort of predates the recognition of the opportunity. So we really have to, somebody has to be there to point it out to them.
Yeah. Okay.
There are
several people who have come who would like to testify, and I'd like to bring them up if that's okay. Do you have a quick question, Representative Bingham?
I don't think it'd be quick.
Okay. Well, Mr. Arbeit will still be here, and he'll be available. Apologies to people who came expecting other parts of this budget to be looked at. I think we won't go beyond this subject today, so we'll have to reschedule for the rest. I see Will Craig, and I see some other. I think there are three people who asked to. Why don't you all come up to the table? Everyone who has something to say on this, come up to the table, and we'll kind of do you sequentially. Same time.
Maybe even elf. No,
Andrew, you can put some more chairs if you need them.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Will Craig. I'm the assistant director at CURA, the Center for Urban and Regional Affairs at the University of Minnesota. You can tell by the color of my hair, I shouldn't speak about David's, he's got more than I do, that I've been in this business for quite a while. I've been on a number of national groups, and I was the guy at the University of Minnesota who was helping to get the technology started back in LIMIC back in the late 60s and early 70s. I now sit on a group called the National States Geographic Information Council. I'm on the board. And this is a group that tries to represent the GIS coordinating councils in 50 states. We don't have 50 states. We've only got 48 states, and it looks like we could go to 47. And I think that'd be sort of an embarrassment for here's the place that has been a leader in developing the technology to fall off and drop away from the table. So Minnesota doesn't coordinate its GIS activities. You notice nobody here from a state agency. This is an executive decision that the proposal would come in at a lower price, and so people from the Department of Homeland Security, State Department of Public Safety, the Division of Homeland Security, DNR, DOT, would all love to be here saying that we need LMIC to coordinate and our activities to help us communicate better with each other, to connect and work with each other. But they're sort of can't. Let me just talk about one particular issue. I know that LMIC and the Governor's Council have been talking with the Office of Enterprise Technology. It's clear that the Office of Enterprise Technology has done a great job of beginning to coordinate the technology infrastructure of the state. But GIS is a component of that, and we're talking about yanking away the crutch. LMIC is going to work with Office of Enterprise Technology, but now there isn't if this bill goes through as it stands, there wouldn't be a limit. There wouldn't be any way for the Office of Enterprise Technology to coordinate these GIS activities. You've heard a lot about what the good things LMIC is doing. I'm sort of trying to put this in a different perspective to say from a national level, what we have been doing in Minnesota makes a lot of sense. I think we should continue it, and I would argue for full funding for LMIC. That is back to where things were, and as we think about moving forward in the future, the strategic plan that David made mention to that would work, in fact, with the Office of Enterprise Technology, we may be back asking for a little more funding to do it better. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Let's hear from everyone. Say who you are and where you're from.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and members, for your time. And my name is David Claypool. I'm a Ramsey County Surveyor. And, Madam Chair, you might remember about 20 years ago or whenever it was, we used to come to the LCMR committee trying to get GIS systems going. I've been working on GIS for 21 years. I've had the first coordinate control GIS database in the state, one of the very first in the United States. We've grown since then at the county level, just like LMIC has grown at the state level. And we do a lot of things. I personally sit on some national committees as well. NACO GIS, I sit on the National Cadastral Committee, and I work on the some other issues that are state and federal committee work. And all of the committees I sit on are best when we go here from Minnesota, we go with a great deal of respect. And part of that respect comes from the fact we have LMIC. And I echo Will in the idea that LMIC, I don't know what we do without LMIC. I really don't know. You see, in Minnesota, we don't have direct connections. Now, my original writing notes here that I've written to talk to you about is that we have strong county governments in Minnesota. Many of us have done an awful lot of work already to get our data together and do different things. The unfortunate part is at the state level is we don't have anybody to interact between collecting that information together and working together with the federal, except LMIC. MnDOT builds roads, DNR takes care of that land, and we don't have that function. LMIC's the only place that it's there. I would like to say not only does LMIC is the only, as far as I know, LMIC's the only place in the state that can do things like this and get it done. And they have tools, but most importantly of all, they have the knowledge, the skills, the wisdom that are necessary to do these things. There's not a unique group like this anywhere else in the state. And with all these different areas where I work, and I represent Minnesota or the county, Ramsey County, at the national level. By the way, I'm not here representing Ramsey County today. I'm here as a representative of the Minnesota Association of County Surveyors. I think we really have to be serious about not losing these links, building more and more links. I myself, about 2 years ago, invited myself into the emergency management and said, how come you're not using GIS, just like David just did at the federal level? Now think about that, because we have data in our system at the county level that isn't at the state level. It's stronger. It's more local data. And we want that to go up. We want David to be able to pass that on. If David's not there in the form of LMIC, it's not going to happen, at least not in any reasonable fashion. And they are federal liaison for the collective efforts. And my statements about Linux used to be that they're an important cog in the wheel. They're not that anymore. They're not only an important cog in the wheel here in Minnesota, where we all work together very well, but they're what I consider a hub. If you look at it nationally, they're the hub at the point, this point. And that's where we really need to look and give them credit for what they're accomplishing, get them, keep them in the business. I would encourage you to consider their funding back to the 2 years ago, and that, in my eyes, this is going to grow. You're not going to keep these things from growing. It's the way we have of life these years, and we have to deal with it. And if anybody from the state property people want to know where vacant land is, come on over to Ramsey and we'll tell you where it is. We'll get you good deals. But please please consider this, Madam Chair and members. I think it's extremely important.
Okay. One more person, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ron Wenzel. I'm here representing the Department of Interior, U.S. Geological Survey. I'm the geospatial liaison in Minnesota, and I work with other federal agencies, state agencies, and local governments around the state. Question about background. The USGS is interested because we were the primary civilian federal agency that did most of the mapping around the United States, and our involvement with LIMIT goes back for its inception 30 years ago, probably. And our common interest is in mapping the country for the public out of it. And I do want to, for the record, I think you should have received a letter that came from our director of our National Geospatial Technical Operations Center, emphasizing continued or restored funding for LIMIC, primarily to support the coordination activities they've done in Minnesota over the years. And just to touch on what some of those activities involve, it's really implementing common and open standards, something you're already talking about within your own state organizations, how to ensure public access to maps and geospatial data. You've heard reference to a lot of GIS web activities that are going on. How do you make that available to the public? Our biggest goal is to try to reduce duplication of effort, especially in terms of data collection. But there's a lot of air photography, a variety of collection activities that are going on across the federal, state, and local level. LIMIC is one of the few agencies in the country that does serve that coordination role. And finally, to really support the enterprise architecture and distributed services that the government and administration is looking at right now. And I'm hoping that I got word just before our committee meeting. There will likely be one more letter coming in from the Federal Geographic Data Committee echoing support along the same line. And Madam Chair, if required or requested, we can get this copy sent. It did go out to the Governor today, to Commissioner Badgero, and to CIO Conn as well. And if members of the committee like it, we can make sure you get it as well.
Okay, that's the new one. We have this one.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, we distributed this to the committee members. But the other one that's coming, we will certainly continue to. Are there any questions for any of these members, any of these people? Okay. Anyone else want to say anything? Okay. Thank you very much for coming. We appreciate it, and we will probably be back to you. Okay. Meeting adjourned.